24 Cross Media.
And welcome back to another episode of TCB with HW3. In the house with my co-host, the General, Jim Williams. Jim, welcome back, buddy.
Thank you. What's up, big fella?
Not much, man. A little momentous occasion. We got a notification from Buzzsprout about our 1,000th download.
Yes.
Which is pretty cool.
It is. It is.
And that's just on their platform alone. So apparently we're hitting some great spaces with some people out there.
That's good. That's good. I'm glad.
So, yeah, no. I mean, we're, I think, 24, 25 episodes in. We're connected to the computer. That's what that was. And, yeah, so I was quite happy when I got that notification. Sent it to you right away. You were ecstatic as well.
Yeah, yeah. That's great.
It's cool to see.
Yeah, it is. It you know, the validation that, you know,
somebody out
not,
there.
We're not just two idiots in here on every other week just, you know, doing whatever.
For nothing, for ourselves. Right. But no, that we have a nice little following that's hopefully growing, and we'll keep bringing out new content.
That's good.
What's going on in your world, pal?
Not a whole lot.
You're not happy with the Ford Motor Corp right now.
Yeah. Well,
it's not really, Ford necessarily.
It's really not Ford. It's kind of my dealership. My dealership and my salesman. But him and I are going to have a come to Jesus moment here shortly because,
yeah,
I'm not too happy of a camper.
If Elvis was around, you'd have the proper truck.
I would too. I would too, and I wouldn't have had to pay for it probably either.
The funny thing is, getting into what we're going to talk about in a little bit, when Joe Esposito was talking about the Circle G Ranch, that it started out simply with just him buying Priscilla a horse for Christmas. Then he bought Jerry Schilling's girlfriend a horse so she had somebody to ride with. Then it was Elvis and Jerry had horses. Then it was everybody had horses. They ran out of room.
Next thing you know, they had a posse.
He buys the ranch. He buys cabins, or he buys trailers. He buys pickup trucks. Yeah. Then everybody's got cowboy boots and hats. And the funny, ironic thing, and Elvis said the property was meant to be purchased by him, from what Joe Esposito said, was there was a giant cross in the center of a lake on the property. So,
yep.
But, yeah, it's, we watched the, we're going to review the special, Elvis Presley, the later years that you found on Tubi.
Yep.
TV. And for anybody who's looking for Elvis content or fresh Elvis content, there's a lot on Tubi. You sent me screen cap after screen cap after screen cap.
It was ridiculous.
Of stuff.
You know, I started watching That's the Way It Is, and then it just kept giving me more and more and more, and I was like, holy crap.
Yeah, I noticed That's the Way It Is on there. Elvis on Tour is on there. Maybe.
I don't know if it is or not.
But
I have Elvis on Tour on DVD. It's That's the Way It Is the one that I don't have on DVD.
Aloha was on there. I saw that Tortured Soul documentary that we covered already was on there.
The one about the making of the 69 special is on there too.
Yep.
That's on there.
So there's tons of content.
Oh, yeah.
We'll be choosing stuff from there. As we go forward, when we're looking for stuff to review, I have a big, big plans for next episode.
Okay.
I'll throw it out there now as a little preview. I want us to, since Frank Sinatra and Tony Bennett had big success later in their career with duets albums.
Right.
I want us to you pick your top five, I'll pick my top five. Songs you would want to hear Elvis duet and who you would want him to sing them with.
Okay.
So it's a fantasy thing. Obviously, it's nothing that can happen, but I think it's pretty cool because there's so many talented musicians out there.
Oh, God.
And there's so many songs to choose from.
And,
so.
and there's a lot of artists currently that cover a lot of Elvis's stuff.
Or too, that have, yeah.
You know? So
So I think that'll make for a fun episode. But for now, let's get into our review of Elvis Presley, the later years. What'd you think of it?
I mean, it a lot of stories that you don't yet you've already heard in previous interviews and stuff, but I like the fact that they had like you know, Bill Bays from the Stamps.
Yep.
You know, and they had Ronnie Tutt was talking about was on there quite a bit. Joe was in there a little bit. Colonel Parker's secretary, I was about to throw my phone straight across the room if I had to listen to her anymore.
Yeah, it seems like a very nice, you know, but naive woman.
Yes, she, again, yes, very nice woman. I had no problem with that, but if I had to listen to one more time about how the colonel supposedly cared about Elvis and everything else,
yeah,
I was going to wing my phone across the across the living room. So
yeah, I noticed they looped a lot of Aloha footage.
Yes. I think it was pretty much all of it.
I don't think anything.
I don't remember seeing a clip that was anything but.
But Aloha.
And that was at the peak.
That was, you know. Over on Outlaw Blitz, you'll see it'll be on this week's episode. G-Mac had posed a question about if you can go back in time to go to any one event, whether it be a sporting event, concert, whatever, what would you choose? And I said, the Aloha concert.
Oh, absolutely.
That was him at his best.
Right, at his peak. And and Joe talked about that in the interview. He said that, you know, Elvis had gotten himself in the greatest shape that he had ever been in. And, you know, he didn't look all foggy on stage and stuff. He looked like he was really clear.
He did.
And, you know, we talk about all these concerts and stuff. But that one for me is my favorite. I could watch that thing over and over and over again and not get sick of it.
Yep.
You know?
Joe Gershow talks a lot about traveling with the size of the orchestra. And he had actually gone to the colonel about scaling it down.
Right.
And the colonel made a joke. He was like, Joe, you're the only conductor I've ever dealt with that wanted to bring less musicians than more.
Right.
But it was a lot, and Ronnie Tutt touched on it too, that all the equipment, all the sound stuff traveled on its own plane or truck, wherever.
Right.
So they had to get to the arenas.
Right. So you had
early
Elvis,
to
right.
set up.
Right. So you had Elvis and his entourage and all of that stuff on the Lisa Marie, and then they had what they called the entertainment plane.
Yeah, pretty much.
Where they had all the musicians and everything else that flew. So they're flying three planes all over the place, you know.
Yeah, no, and he said, you know, it was tough. You get back to the hotel after a big show.
Right.
You're amped up.
Right.
Now you're trying to go to sleep and get more proper rest to get back up early, back on another plane to fly ahead of Elvis
right.
to get to the city to set up your equipment. Back then, and they alluded to it too, very few acts had an elaborate setup for stage shows. It wasn't the norm yet like it is now.
And
Colonel was about keeping costs down, so they were very scaled back, which meant the musicians and the security and those guys were the ones that were setting up the majority of the equipment in these venues.
And to hear... to hear Joe talk about it, it reminded me of like the president. Like they had an advance party that would go a day ahead, the security team that would go and lock down the hotel. They'd get all the room keys, room assignments. When the plane landed, they were there. Here's all your stuff. Here's where you're staying. Here's where. And it just sounded like, you know, the president, you know, sending out advance parties to set everything up ahead of time. And
yeah, they said when Elvis's plane would land, there would be somebody presumably could have been Joe or somebody else that was already to the hotel, had pre-checked in, all right. The room assignments were there, and everybody got literally handed a piece of paper.
As you were coming off the plane.
This is where you're going. Yep. This is where your stuff is. They said it was a well-oiled machine, and even most local police agencies could not believe how organized
right.
they were. But were a pleasure to deal with because, hey, Elvis is in town, but these guys have it under wraps. They have it's right. under control.
Right.
So.
And, you know, I mean, I guess with a guy like him, you know, when you're playing a show tonight, a show tomorrow night, a show tomorrow night, a show to, you know, you, right. You have to make sure that you have, you know, everything just right and everything else so that it doesn't go off without a hitch when you're going from town to town every night.
Right. And the ones that, stick out to me, like, it had to be grueling, was he would do, say, an 8 o'clock or 7:30 show and then fly into the next town, but then have a noon matinee or a 1 o'clock matinee and then come back again 7 o'clock or 7:30, do show number 2 of the same day.
Right.
To then pack it up and fly to the next town, do it again.
Right.
Grueling, grueling schedule. And, you know, they wonder why, you know, Elvis broke down the way he did. And listen, a lot of these guys that travel, they lived the life with him.
Right.
I'm sure it wasn't easy. That's why the Imperials left.
Yeah.
They couldn't handle the touring.
I mean, it's grueling, you know?
Yeah.
Takes a toll after a while, you know?
But one part where Joe Gershow said that he was such the perfectionist that he could listen as they were playing, and he would hear a trumpet play a wrong note and stop it and redo it. And you can tell, and I think they encapsulated it perfectly in the documentary, in the movie, or in the show, whatever you want to call it, where he's doing American Trilogy, and he's looking back. It's to the point where it's the big build-up to the end.
Mm-hmm.
And he's looking back, and his eyes are intent. I mean, he's focused in, and you can see him, like, basically getting himself worked up, and he's yelling at the band. And he turns around and belts out the finale to the song.
Yep.
That he was just so in tune with the other musicians there. Ronnie Tutt said, "Listen, I would set up, and sometimes it was isolated, but if Elvis wasn't feeling a song, he would take the mic off the stand and walk over to where the drums were and sing there because he felt the song.
Right, so he could get the feeling, yeah.
But Bill Bays specifically, he was talking about Burning Love when they were rehearsing it, and he says, Elvis had this unique thing where he would look at you or motion to you, and he would expect...
Yep.
you to do something
right.
spectacular or different.
Yeah.
And he didn't know what to do, so he hit like the real high C. And like you said, for a man, that's a very tough note to hit.
Yeah, that's a high key.
But he said he drilled it, and Elvis loved it, and it stayed in the song. And, you know, that was just Elvis on stage. Everybody had to be watching the man himself.
Right.
Because you never know when you're going to be called upon.
To do something.
To do something.
Which cool. most of the time was JD.
Yeah. JD, later on, it was Cheryl Nielsen when they were doing It's Now or Never. There was a lot of Ronnie Tutt. When he was doing the introductions to the band, he would always let them do their thing, like a guitar solo, a drum solo, whatever, and he would always joke. But our song choice for today... You came up with it. I thought it was phenomenal. Bill Bays spoke in the thing about how he was called upon to sing at Elvis's funeral.
Right.
And let's move into the next segment for that.
Okay.
Welcome to my world. Won't you come on in? Miracles, I guess, still happen now and then.
And after I said it, I realized I said the word segment, and that's gonna get me some flack. but Bill Bays, he sang with the Stamps from 71 to 76. He was their tenor. He had sang also with, let's see here, I have a little. It's ironic that he had passed away just before we went to Memphis last year.
Yeah, you had brought that up off air, and I didn't even realize that.
Yeah, May of last year he passed away. Let's see. He was an ordained minister, sang tenor for the Smitty Gatlin Trio from 66 and 67, and then with the Stamps from 71 through 76. But from 76 up through 2018, he was by himself, and he released a few albums, and it was always gospel-related stuff.
Yeah.
Elvis absolutely loved him. He performed with other quartets, Echoes of Cavalry, the Illinoisans, the Trailsman's Quartet, and so on and so forth. But
sure, you don't know any of those?
I don't. I am not very well versed in gospel music, unfortunately. Maybe I should. But he often sang "Sweet Sweet Spirit" on stage when the Elvis would want the Stamps to perform a song, and he had a. Or a prominent role in that song, but this, what was the song that now that he sang at Elvis's funeral?
It was called. Oh, now you put me on the spot. It was called.
Hang on,
I can't remember.
Trying to rescue you here.
Yeah, trying to save me here. When it's my time.
Yes, when it's my time.
That's right. When it's my time, and I remember, I had told you that I remembered. In part of the interview, he said that he was asked to do that song and that he was right behind Elvis's casket when he sang it at the funeral. And I thought, well, I wonder if this thing's on YouTube. And sure enough, I found it, a couple versions of it. The one version wasn't really too clear, like you couldn't really understand the words sometimes.
Right.
And then there was this version that we're about to play.
And he did it live in concert.
Yes.
And let's give it a listen.
When it's my time for tears and for trials, when it's my time to carry a heavy load, when this old heart of mine starts to tremble, then it's my time to call on my when it's my time to be talked of unkindly, when it's my time to be criticized, when my whole world is falling around me, call on my Lord. Oh, there's nothing like the sweetness of Jesus being near. Oh, nothing like His presence to dry my every tear, when my whole world is falling around me. Oh, then it's my time. Yes, it is.
Call.
Take a bow, Bill.
Powerful, amazing, amazing voice.
Man, I don't know how people don't blow their vocal cords out like that. I mean, yeah. Elvis, when he did Hurt and all right. of that, I'm like, man.
It's funny because you'll hear, was it Bill Cherry or Dwight Eisenhower? They call it 2 minutes of torture because for a man to hit in that register or to be able to sing and go up during right. the song too. And that was the big thing with Hurt. When he sang, he would sing it through once, and just when you thought you heard the best, it played again, and he would go through the ending again, and he would take it up a whole nother right. octave. I mean, it was amazing. Just thinking the power of the song itself, and then to be standing in Graceland behind Elvis's casket. Right. And being called upon to sing a song that powerful at such a meaningful moment.
Right.
Is amazing to me, breathtaking. But it's funny, you could hear Elvis getting amped up in the background a few times, yelling like, go, oh, bring it.
Yeah.
And then after, I cut it off there. There's, Elvis tells him to take a bow, but then he makes him sing the ending again.
Right.
And he jokes with him about blowing out his speakers.
Blowing the speakers.
What do you think you are? Tom Jones, Engelbert Humperdinck? But again, that's why every show, you know, people would say, oh, later on they became cookie cutter shows and there wasn't a lot. But listen, you know, there were some bad shows. I've heard a couple. One was, like I told you, I found the one that was recorded. Ironically, on my birthday in 76, that was terrible. I mean, it's one of those. And listen, the guy said over the years, there were times where Colonel marched him out on stage and there's no way he should have been near a stage.
Right, he never should have been out there.
But for the moments like this, when you're lucky enough to be at a show to hear Elvis and then hear, you know, the Stamps would do a song or the Sweets would do a song. Cheryl Nielsen would come in and do the Italian version of It's Now or Never. It was really all bonuses, man. You got to hear some of the top musicians in the entire world sing along with and then do some solo stuff with Elvis, which was great.
Right.
Yeah, that's what made those shows special. So.
Yep.
I'm glad you picked that. You know, I was thinking of some other Elvis, regular Elvis songs.
But, yeah, I mean...
Bill Bays was featured so prominently in that documentary, so I think it was appropriate
right.
to play it.
And I just happened to hear him say, I remembered him saying about that story, so I said, you know, let me go see if I can find this thing, because I would never know what the song sounded like. I didn't, you know.
Right.
So, and then I was lucky enough to find it, and I was like, okay.
Yeah.
I was like, let's see if we can roll with this.
That's why YouTube's awesome.
That's it. That's it, man. If it wasn't for YouTube.
You can pull a lot of the most obscure stuff.
If it wasn't for YouTube, we'd be just a couple of fools sitting here.
because, you know, it's tough. A lot, again, you know, not every concert was recorded. Although there are soundboard recordings of most of the concerts.
Right.
FTD, Follow That Dream, has gone in years past here up until present day. And found the better soundboards to be able to, you know, rehash them and produce them and put out good quality CDs. But I've heard really bad soundboards too.
Yeah.
Where it was like, I don't even know. It didn't even sound like they were in the same damn arena.
Right.
So we recorded it on, I don't know, portable cassette player from 1975 or whatever.
It was probably still that reel-to-reel.
Yeah. I'm sure a lot of it was. And that makes you think of how much stuff got lost over the years. But I know... Just from our trip, they store so much stuff in part of the exhibition. Remember, you went through and they had all the cataloged drawers of everything. So,
and then they had the case.
Right.
That had stuff that they hadn't even put out yet and basically told you, come on back because they're going to figure out where to put all that too. So, things just going to keep getting bigger and bigger as they pull stuff out.
That's what I'm saying. The dream job, man. Andrew Marchese with Graceland, with Elvis Presley Enterprises, has the best job in the world.
Right. She's got free reign of the whole entire place.
The whole place. Anywhere in the mansion she wants to go. She has access to
everything. Yep. That'd be great. Oh my God, that'd be great.
That's a, I tell you, it's a huge undertaking too, and you're in charge of the personal collection of the most world-renowned entertainer,
right?
And you're, you know, again, constantly evolving the displays so when fans come back, they're not seeing the same old thing,
right? And having to catalog all that,
right?
And, oh.
Little things I found amazing that I've heard her say during interviews too, is they still. The cleaning process at Graceland, that it gets cleaned every day, and they do deep cleanings twice a week.
Yep.
And upstairs gets cleaned regularly once a week. Everything yep. is dusted and put back to where Elvis left it.
So could you imagine the person that has that access?
Yeah, you've got to listen.
I'm sure those people are vetted to the absolute.
Oh, I'm sure the background check for these people that are working and doing that job has to be as much as like the FBI or the CIA. God. Listen, you're being put in a spot that the general public is not allowed.
Correct.
That only family members and a few other people, the entire world can get
now there. I wonder if the people that clean up there are like maybe family of some sort.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Just to be able to. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You notice she's constantly, as soon as they come in, if they go anywhere off the path of the tour, which is anywhere behind the ropes, they take their shoes off. They have booties on. They have white gloves on.
Yep.
I'm sure upstairs when they're doing the cleaning, they're probably in a clean suit of some sort. Now not only are you dealing with all of the everything that's there, but stuff that's there now is getting to be up in years.
Right.
So you're dealing with stuff that is 60, 70, 100 years old if it wasn't new to the house.
Right.
And
I remember 31 years ago now.
Right.
When I went through the first time, they made sure that they told you absolutely no flash.
Right.
You could take pictures. But you could not use a flash.
Right.
Because they said the thousands and thousands of people that go through the house every year, that if they allowed you to use flash bulbs, it would fade the furniture faster. Yeah, it would
discolor everything.
Right, it would discolor everything. Yep. So
the process that goes through, I would imagine all that stuff has to be treated with something to keep it from fading or
you would think.
Right. But the carpet, I mean, again, everything past the ropes, it's pristine. You could see the vacuum marks in the carpet itself.
Yeah.
But I wonder how often they have to go through and make repairs and change stuff out. Because, listen, there's thousands. We saw the day that we were there, there's probably 10,000 people that walked through Graceland that day.
Oh, yeah.
Now, do that every day.
Right.
That stuff gets trampled down. Eventually, it has to get... worn down and replaced, I would imagine. That's why the path is so distinct, I'm sure. You're not going down into the jungle room, so you're not going to be walking around on that shag rug or that lily white rug that's in the living room.
That would have been a picture.
What's that?
That would have been a picture to be able to actually get down and stand in the jungle room and get a picture. That
right.
would have been great. But
and you think about when they did the Christmas special. How they had to let the musicians down in there with the music and the instruments to set up. I'm sure there was a big preparation that went to it.
Oh,
and
I'm sure.
And a big deep clean and
it was
restoration afterwards.
Oh, yeah. 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 I'm sure it was a process.
But that's still, to me, it's, hey, Angie, where are you going? Oh, I got to go up to Elvis's bedroom. I'm looking for something. It's cool.
Right.
It's cool as hell.
I mean, come on.
But.
Where do I sign up for that job when
I'm retired? For real. Listen, imagine being the guy that ran the gate.
Right. I wouldn't mind being security.
The modern day Uncle Vester.
Yeah.
At the front gate, open and close, open and close.
Yep.
It's cool though. It's cool.
Yep.
What you got going on? Come forward. Anything exciting?
I'm in the middle of watching The Program. It's about a It's about a school that was run in my hometown up in Ogdensburg, New York.
Really?
And it turned out to be like a cult. They sucked in the parents, and then they sent the kids there, and the kids were being physically, sexually, mentally abused.
Wow.
And it's on Netflix. If you have Netflix, look it up. It's called The Program. And wow, it's a true story. And as of right now, there is a lot of crap going on in my hometown since this thing aired on Netflix. And people are receiving death threats.
Oh, my God.
The cops are going up there just about every single night, because when the people left that were running the school, they left all of the records and they left all of the video footage, the security video footage of the kids getting abused and punched.
Oh, my
and,
God.
So a group of the kids that were there, the one girl who's the leader, they went in and they actually were filming inside the school and telling you about all the stuff that they had to do. And it's crazy.
Now, what was the time frame? And is the school, is it closed now? I'm assuming?
Oh, it's closed. It's closed. I haven't gotten to the end of it, to find out how it got closed or if they just up and left or what.
Do you know exactly, you know exactly where it is?
Oh, I know exactly. I went to school there.
You went to school?
Well, I didn't go to the actual, it's called Ivy Ridge Academy.
Okay.
I didn't go to Ivy Ridge. What it was is it was a privately owned college by the Catholic Archdiocese. So I went there as a college student.
Okay.
Later on, the college closed. These people came in and bought the property, opened up this Ivy Ridge Academy,
yep,
and that's when all the stuff happened.
And what, so it was still Ivy Ridge when you went there for college?
No, it was called Modern Day College.
Okay.
When I went there.
Wow.
Yeah. And to see it, you know, to know that I was there and in those classrooms and everything else, and then to find out what happened afterwards. And I'm seeing a lot of people in the documentary that actually worked there, mm-hmm, that I know personally.
Wow.
Yes. So
that's crazy.
It's really wild.
I'm guessing this documentary just recently came out.
It just aired, I want to say Wednesday or Thursday of last week.
Oh, so this is brand spanking new.
Yeah, it's literally brand new. Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
That's,
and it's crazy what happened there. And like I said, to see and know, there's a couple people in there that I actually know, and mm-hmm, then there's other people that I know from Ogdensburg because,
right,
you know, it's a small city, but it's wild that any of that stuff happened there. It's crazy.
Oh my. And how long is the documentary?
Couple hours. Like the first one was I think it's in three episodes.
Okay.
So like the first one is like 35 minutes. The next one I think is like an hour and maybe a few minutes. And then I don't know how long the third one is, but it's in like three or four episodes and
wow,
you can just, but it's wild.
Yeah,
I just can't believe.
You're going to watch the rest of it?
Oh, yeah.
Later on today?
I'm going to try.
Yeah.
Maybe tonight I'll sit down and try to get through the rest of it, but.
Whew. That's tough, man. Ugh. That's tough, especially it hits home in more ways than one. It's your town, and you know,
and
intimately
know specific
people involved.
Right. That were actually.
Students,
yeah,
there? Or
No. They were actually staff.
Oh, shit.
They were actually staff that was involved in this stuff.
Oh, boy.
And I was just looking at my Facebook today, and there's a group, St. Lawrence County Scanner,
mm-hmm,
feed, and there's all kinds of stuff in there about the cops are getting called because since the documentary came out, people are trying to get up there and want to go through the buildings and stuff. And it's just crazy. They said the death threats are off the chart up there.
Of people that worked there at that,
right,
time?
I think so. I think it's of that and, you know.
Did they state or you're not far enough along to know the people that took it over and then shut it down? Are they not residents, I'm guessing? They took off?
No. The people that bought the building and started the school, I think it sounds like they were from like down south,
okay,
or something, or from other states that came in,
but not local.
But so Ogdensburg, right? Okay. But it's basically a cult, and they in the second episode they kind of break it down and show you how this got started and everything else, and then there was a the one clip that sticks out of my mind. There's a security clip that they showed a grown-ass man put his hands around this kid's neck and literally picks him up off his feet and like runs out of the room with him through the door. It's just mind-blowing.
Wow.
You know, some of the kids were like, "Hey, I don't want to be here. I'm done." And you see the one kid like put his notebook down and like two or three adults are on him. They throw him to the floor. They're kneeling on the back of his neck.
Wow.
Yeah, it was bad.
Are they interviewing or have you seen, do they have any like parents of the children or the children? The children themselves are participating.
With one girl, because this girl took it upon herself, went back to the school, went and tried to get as much records, because everything was left behind. When they left the school, they left all these kids' files and all of the stuff that was done to them. It's all just laying in the building up there.
That's insane.
And so this one girl
went back. So clearly they weren't concerned about covering up anything.
Apparently not. But this one girl went back and got, I don't know how many records she got. And she spent 6 months like going through and like individualizing people's files. And basically, if they want them, she's putting all of their stuff together, putting it in a mailing envelope and mailing it to these kids so that they physically have their file so that they can say, "Hey, what I told you happened, and I got the proof right here."
Right.
So, yeah.
I smell lawsuit and I smell...
Not going to happen.
Really?
Statute of limitations has run out on most of everything in New York State. Damn. But there is a legislator...
There's a
New York State senator or an assemblyman or something who's calling on Letitia James, the acting attorney general for New York State,
right,
to conduct an investigation anyway. And I saw a news story that said that her and her people are going to be en route up there to take a look at what's left.
There's got to be some sort of retribution, some sort of reparations made to these kids, and that which are now grown adults. That's wild.
Nothing that I know of. Now, right. Like I said, I haven't gotten to the end of this thing.
Right, right.
But this one girl who is actually did the documentary and everything else, she's the one that finally decided that, hey, this story needs to be told.
Yeah, without a doubt.
And got a group of the people that she was with to go back there.
Yeah,
and go through these records, and they were finding stuffs about themselves. They're like, "Oh my God, I just found this about me, and hey, I found something over here about you." And they were walking through the hallways, and there's just file folders of just stuff just laying in the hallways, you know?
That's crazy.
And they went into a room and found this box with all these CDs. I mean, a full box of CDs, and they started looking at them and found out that it was security footage.
So if they were on CDs, so we're talking something that was open.
I want to say it was like 2000.
I was going to say post 2000.
Yeah, it was like 2001 or 2002 until I want to say maybe 2010 or something.
Wow.
I can't remember exactly what the dates
That's
are,
tragic, but, man. That's terrible.
But these kids, so the only thing that these kids these adults are now.
Now they're adults, yeah.
Right. The only thing they're really getting out of it is, hey, I told you this was going on. You told me it wasn't. Now I got proof, and I'm showing you that what I said was true.
Right.
You know? So basically a big F you to.
Yeah. I hope it's not too late. I hope maybe the state can somehow make it so they can see some sort of justice in this whole situation. That's rough.
You would hope.
Yeah. If there is Well, we have legal system for the reason. If there's a true justice out there, then something
will happen. And real quick, they had an interview with a lady that was like the intake person up there.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked her if she would be willing to meet up with this girl who was doing the documentary, and they did at one of the local diners, famous diner. Been there for whatever, but and one of the girls who was a waitress realized what was going on, and they actually had them removed from the diner.
Wow.
They told them that they wanted them to leave.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So
it's polarizing.
It's a big deal up there right now.
Wow.
Big deal. You can't even mention it up there without people wanting to cut your throat.
Let's hope that, let's hope that nothing negative or violent, no violence comes from this. I mean, that's crazy. We hope,
but, it's just nuts to know that happened in my hometown where I
absolutely
was born and raised, and it's just wild.
And you walked the halls of that very building.
I did.
Wow.
Yep.
Well, we definitely took a left turn down Audubon Drive today.
We sure did.
With this, but...
I apologize to
No, don't. I mean, listen, it's...
That's kind of like my rabbit hole at the moment.
Yeah, no, we're an Elvis podcast, but at the same time, we're two dudes, and we talk about our lives, and this is definitely something that... Listen, I got to watch it, and I'll comment more on it next week after I get to see it, but... God, I hope everything works out for those that were affected.
Yeah, and that's I think that's kind of one of the things that maybe they're looking for is maybe some closure. That
you know,
for years after they finally got out of there, you know, people, that didn't happen.
Reminds me so much of, I think the movie was Sleepers, with Kevin Bacon, where these boys were. It was the same thing. It was a Catholic school where they were abused, and years later, I'm not sure how true the story was, but the way the movie, I think it was a true story. The way the movie ended was they saw one of the security guards, Kevin Bacon's role. He was like the ringleader in a diner or a restaurant, and they took him out.
Yeah. Well,
so, you know, but for years, that was after years and years of abuse,
right,
at this alleged school. So, All right. Yeah. But, we'll be back next, not next week, the week after, so bi-weekly. And our next episode, we're going to do Elvis Dream Duets. And we'll touch back on this because I definitely want resolution from, I'm going to watch it myself. And we'll go from there.
Yep.
And, again, in my world right now, nothing exciting going on. It's just getting into the springtime, looking forward to the warmer weather. And
got a trip coming up in a few months, right?
Yeah. Yep. July, we've got a nice little trip planned.
There you go.
And that's it, man. Just keeping our nose to the grindstone right now.
That's it.
You good?
I'm good.
All right, then, for the General, this is HW3. This has been TCB with HW3. And until next time.
Elvis has left the building. Thank you and good night.